They're back together again. Eric and Jeff are reunited as friends. Old Movie BS is back together again. Do you remember the day when Jeff moved away? Well, he changed his mind and turned around. Now he's back to stay. Old Movie BS is back together again.
Welcome to Movie BS with Baron Snyder. I am your host, Jeff Baer. This is my co-host, Eric D. Snyder.
Hi, welcome to the show. I'm Eric D. Snyder. That's Jeff Baer. We are excited to be doing this show.
I got my third cold in a row. I'm getting annoyed.
Yeah?
Yeah. My wife thinks I should wash my hands more, but it feels like the man talking, really. Telling me to do that, but
do you feel like you don't wash your hands enough? Do you think your wife has a point, maybe?
Oh, maybe, sure.
All right. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you're already washing your hands at every reasonable opportunity, then what can you do? But if you're not, then
I guess I could wash my hands a little bit more.
And you have that kid. Don't you sometimes go to places where there's other kids?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, there's your problem right there.
I know. But, like, you can't, like, there's no equal value trade-in. Like, it's not worth it. It's not worth getting rid of them just for the non-colds.
Agree to disagree, I guess.
I guess.
All right, we have two movies to talk about. Neither of which are the two wide releases.
So, wait, there's two wide releases?
There are indeed. There's Krampus, which is about scary Santa Claus or something.
I was totally on board.
Yeah.
That's it. Fine. Sign me up. PG-13. They want to tap into some of that 80s family horror. Fine.
Or something. Maybe. Yeah.
Why don't you want me to see it?
I haven't screened it. I guess there were some screenings in LA like Wednesday. But in general, no promo screenings anywhere. Not really any publicity emails. I know. Adam Scott's been tweeting about it. Like, I've seen lots of promotional stuff. They will do anything to promote this movie short of showing it to people.
Right.
It's one of those. And then also there's a movie called The Letters. And this is what I learned, or what I realized on Twitter this week. If there's a movie that's opening in wide release that I've never heard of, that's not being screened, it's probably a religious movie. And indeed, The Letters is about Mother Teresa.
I think I have this movie.
Rutger Hauer's in it. He doesn't play Mary, Mother Teresa, though.
Does Max von Sydow play Mother Teresa?
No, but he is in the movie. And he plays someone named Celeste. Weird.
Oh, anyway, Father Celeste.
Still, Celeste's the girl's name.
So
those are the movies opening like in more than 1,000 screens this week, but they didn't screen them for...
Interesting. I didn't realize that. Like, yeah, I guess I could have seen this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah, someone offered to send me a link, actually, to it, eventually.
Yeah.
I was like, nah. Not the publicist, I mean, but like some other critic.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, no, not the studio. They don't need us.
Right.
But we do have other movies to talk about. First of them is Legend.
Legend.
From 1985, stars Tom Cruise. And do you remember that movie?
Yeah, did we? I watched it in the last 2 or 3 years.
I watched it in the last 2 or 3 weeks. It was on HBO.
Oh, wow. Did you?
Yeah, because I hadn't seen him before.
You know what's so weird about that movie to me?
Everything.
Is the odd use of a stretched wide shot for the villain, who's played by some Tim Curry.
Tim Curry, yes.
As the villain.
Yeah.
Even though unrecognizable. And more importantly, do you know who the female lead is?
It's Mia Sara.
Mia Sara from?
I don't know. IMDb says Mia Sara.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, yeah. It's her. Sloan.
That's it. Sloan. Sloan and Legend.
She was
I'll
in Time Cop, too.
Oh, sorry.
I believe she was Jean-Claude Van Damme's dead wife, possibly in Time Cop.
Anyway, Not that Legend is what we're saying.
Legend is, there's a new movie called Legend. Nothing to do with Tom Cruise. Instead, Tom Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
Different guy. And there's two of him. So they got my letters. They finally made a movie with two Tom Hardys.
I like that you have Tom Hardy in a lead, but could you also have Tom Hardy in the other lead?
And could the second lead Tom Hardy maybe be gay?
Really?
But I'm just asking.
End result. Was that the Tom Hardy gay that you were hoping for?
Well, not exactly, but you know, you take what you can get.
Right, right.
This is the story people I didn't really know anything about, nope, but I take the movie's word for it that they existed.
Sure, why not?
The Cray brothers, twins, Reggie and Ronnie,
mm-hmm.
and they were notorious London gangsters in the 60s, owned nightclubs and busted kneecaps and stuff.
Ronnie has glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Reggie doesn't. Ronnie is clinically insane.
Yeah. You'd think the one with glasses is going to be the smarter one, but no, he's the crazy dumb one.
That's right, and Reggie, it's a gangster story. One loves being a gangster, and the other one wants to make a clean break from it. Ideally,
Reggie rather is the one who kind of runs things. Reggie is the one who looks like regular Tom Hardy. Ronnie, he wears glasses and he's done something with his teeth that's different.
Yeah, do you know what he's done?
Well, it looked like he got some false plate there in the bottom.
You actually don't have to cover your mouth when you say it.
I'm showing you what I just got there in the teeth.
I think he simply opens up his mouth.
No, I was looking. Speaking as one who has given much contemplation to the details of Tom Hardy's face, I'm telling you, he's got different teeth between the two guys.
Now, hang on a second. Gyllenhaal Gosling Hardy.
That's probably about right.
Oh, is that the order?
I don't know if that's the order, but they're all in the Parthenon.
Are they in the top three?
I don't know.
They're
in the top five.
All right.
I feel safe saying that.
Okay.
But anyway, Ronnie's the crazy one. He just likes busting heads, being a gangster. Reggie is like the smart. He can be a businessman. He can run the nightclub. And he's fine with the business side of being a gangster. Kind of wants to give it up for his girlfriend, but...
Kind of,
not really.
Emily Browning plays the girlfriend / narrator of Francis. This year's tale, Francis. And let's see. So my first question to you, at what minute mark, since we had the screener, we were special. Mm-hmm. We had the screener for this one. At what minute mark did you contemplate turning the subtitles on?
Very soon. It was very soon.
I wrote down 3 minutes.
I did. I turned them on for a little bit here and there.
Did you?
I did a little bit.
You did? Mm-hmm. I decided not to. It felt like it was cheating. But it's definitely one of those super thick accents on the two Hardy boys.
Some thick London accents, yeah. Lower class.
Yeah.
I think that's East End. I think that's the East End of London where they talk like that.
It's a weird movie. For a few reasons. One, Tom Hardy loses himself in both characters,
mm-hmm.
but I never lost myself in thinking that that was two individuals. So it's like I felt stuck on that gimmick of, oh, look what they're doing here. That's pretty impressive.
See, I didn't get stuck on that. I think it's hard not – just because we know, it's hard not to think – of how they, you know, it's hard to shoot when you've got one guy playing two characters. But I felt like in general, there were sometimes when I did get kind of caught up in it and sort of forgot about that for a while.
I'm kind of done with that as a focus of a film of one guy playing two characters.
That's not the focus. I mean, you're focusing on it, but it's
okay,
not.
Okay, hang on. Then more importantly, what do you think the story is that they're trying to tell except for – here's a highlight reel from the Cray brothers' life.
Well, that's about it.
That's it. Like they don't have a coherent point.
No, it's not a very deep movie. I think both of his performances are really good, and they're two distinct characters. And even the way they kind of carry themselves and talk is different. But we never really get inside their heads very much, either one of them. And it is just kind of a rundown of – I think it's an entertaining gangster story, but there's not much to it.
Yeah, it's like –
that.
more importantly, it it jumps with no real flow to the point where like Paul Bettany's in it for a little bit. And then
as a rival gangster.
And then the narrator, Francis, just tells us that's done. And then eventually there's a marriage and the wife is popping pills. And it's just everything is just kind of sudden, like, oh, by the way, here we are now. Oh, by the way, here we are now. And it doesn't ever build upon itself. I wanted it to either have a better flow or stay in one time period for a longer period, because I just never felt that it was allowing me in to care or be super interested. And I love caring about the gangster life.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
Yeah, it is sort of like a rushed version of Goodfellas or something like that.
It's like there's a 4-hour cut and then a studio head said, no way, I know what to do with this. It doesn't feel like it was in the hands of an expert craftsman.
That may be, although I agree that there's not much of a point to it, but it sort of jumping quickly through time didn't strike me as a problem so much as, you know, we're trying to cover 10 years in the life of these guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't really have a point of view or a reason other than to be show these gangsters being awful.
I loved
brutal sometimes.
I loved, two fight sequences, both involving the brothers, once, against others in a bar and then once against each other in a bar like that. Those are to me absolutely the end all be all highlights of this film, filmed very well.
Yeah. They do a good, we always know that it's one guy, but it's, in general, I felt like the, cinematic trickery to make that happen was pretty seamless.
Yes.
Like the only times I really noticed the camera work, had nothing to do with that. Actually had to do with other things.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, it's not like you're saying, oh, I see how they've got a different guy's arm there and they faked it at all. They make it all look pretty good.
They do make it all look pretty good. I think for me, it's almost more interesting to go the other route now. Joseph Gordon-Levitt trying to look like Bruce Willis, and in things in that regard, it would almost be more interesting for two actors to play identical twins and have them get it as close as possible. Because it's like, yeah, I get it. We can do the trickery. We've succeeded in that. There's nothing.
But, yeah. But I don't feel like this movie is like drawing attention to that fact.
I agree with what you're saying, but simply the act of doing it is drawing attention to it. The biggest surprise for me, are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Chaz Palminteri is not dead. Did you know that?
I hadn't thought about it, I guess.
When he was in this movie, I was like, I could not possibly tell you the last time he's been in a film.
He represents the American mafia in this movie,
right,
and in general, I feel like. That's sort of what he does.
That's right. That's his role now. But yeah, it was like I saw him and I was like, oh, my first thought was, oh, this must be his last role.
I
was like, no, he's still totally fine and around. He just hasn't done anything lately.
And well, he's done a lot of voice work last several years, it looks like.
All right.
In general, yeah, just
hanging
out, being Chaz.
Right, sure. As you do.
I like this movie just fine. I give it a B.
I thought there was a couple of good moments, but as far as a gangster movie goes, it feels like it watched the other gangster movies and then did a little something to it. So it's a 6 out of 10.
The other movie we have to talk about, or that I have to talk about, because you didn't bother to see it.
Yeah.
Chi-Raq. I didn't know how to say the title either until I saw the movie. Chi-Raq.
Oh, you just assume I would have struggled with the title because I had never heard it out loud before?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's about right.
Chi-Raq, it's a play on – it's what they call Chicago. It's like Chicago and Iraq, Chi-Raq. Because it's all like Iraq up in there.
Is this Caprini Greens, like that kind of area? Sounds
familiar. Somebody said that, yeah.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. It's about the gangs. They got the gangs over there. And Spike Lee is on it. I missed the last Spike Lee joint. I don't think he calls them joints anymore either.
Are you sure? You don't know that officially.
I didn't. This one, I don't think this one said, this one didn't say joint in the credits.
Huh.
Anyway, and I really like this movie. It's probably my favorite Spike Lee movie in a long time.
Stop. Hang on. Here,
what?
I've looked at this cast list.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty nice cast list.
Yeah.
But there's one problem.
What is it?
The lead.
Nick Cannon.
Can't be a good movie.
He's not really the lead.
And oh, okay.
Two, it is. He's really good in it. Nick Cannon is pretty good, actually.
Oh, wait.
In things. He's been good in things.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I know. It's surprising.
We just
assume, yeah.
His personality for whatever reality show, like how I've been able to see like seconds of Nick Cannon, or that he mm-hmm. was married to Mariah Carey or still is. I don't know. Like,
no, he was in a movie called American Son several years ago at Sundance where he was a soldier who was home on leave or something. He was really good in that.
I didn't see that either. Wow. Yeah. This is very surprising
It'll
to
surprise
me.
You.
Hang on. Does Sweet Blood of Jesus...
Yeah, I missed that one. That was Spike Lee's last joint.
And then Old Boy. Man, I totally forgot
right,
that he actually did Old Boy.
Yeah. So yeah. In Chirac, here's the deal. You remember that ancient Greek play Lysistrata by Aristophanes?
I got it on my desk right now, halfway through.
Right. It's a modern telling of that. Lysistrata was about a woman, the woman who got all the women of Greece together to go on a sex strike. Refused to have sex with their men until their men stopped fighting, stopped the war.
Whoa.
And so this, here we got a lady named Lysistrata, played by Teona Paris, whose boyfriend, Nick Cannon, is a rapper and a gangster named Chirac, named after the nickname for the town. And he's with the Spartans. And then there's also some Trojans, or the other gang. Purple and orange are their colors. And Lysistrata gets all the women together and says, hey, let's not give it up to our men folk till they quit with the fighting. And here's why else I like it. Because in keeping with the ancient Greek drama thing, it's told – much of the film is in rhyme. Much of the dialogue rhymes. Not all of it, but a lot of it.
Okay.
You got Samuel Jackson at the beginning and sprinkled throughout as like the Greek chorus to come along and narrate and wearing a great suit telling us about it. And it's which is perfect because, I mean, obviously hip hop rap would be the language of mm-hmm. of this culture, and so it makes sense for the film to kind of feel that way and have that hustle and flow to it. And then it's it's angry about the gun violence and all that, but it's also it makes some scathing satirical points. It gets ridiculous a couple of times on purpose. As that the lengths that the men will go to convince the women to have sex with them and how difficult it is to abstain.
All right, wait. Out of I don't know how big their roles are here, but there's four names that I need to know about.
Mm-hmm.
Pick whichever you want to talk about here. Dave Chappelle, D.B. Sweeney, John Cusack, and Wesley Snipes.
Wesley Snipes plays the leader of the other gang, Cyclops. He's missing an eye, hence the name. He's good. He doesn't have a lot to do, but he's kind of funny in his stuff. John Cusack plays the priest, one of very few white faces in the movie, and they eventually bring up the fact that he's this white priest in a totally black church, but it's not really an issue. And that's an interesting choice that I would actually be curious to hear Spike Lee talk about, like the choice to have a white priest. Who else did you say?
D.B. Sweeney and Dave Chappelle.
Mayor's fine. And Dave Chappelle doesn't have a lot to do.
No.
He is funny. I only can remember one scene that he's in. And he's funny in it. I think he runs a club that is like dead now because there's no ladies going out like looking for action. Mm. Oh, and even the prostitutes, even the hoes are on strike.
Oh my gosh.
So men can't get none nowhere. Up in here, it's very current. It's very up to the minute. They name check George Zimmerman and Darren Wilson. They mentioned Charleston, the shooting.
But it's in reference to like gun violence, and that's not recent, is it?
What do you
gun
mean?
Violence in this
gun,
country?
No, yeah, no, I know. It's sort of about a long time ago when gun violence was a problem.
Right.
This is, you know how people who don't want to deal with the issue of white cops killing unarmed black men will always change the subject by saying, what about black-on-black crime?
Yeah, yes.
This is what that's about. This is pretty much strictly – I mean, it's about guns in general, but it's specifically about how these gangs in Chicago are wiping each other out. And okay. Innocent bystanders. Jennifer Hudson plays the mother of a little girl who's killed accidentally in a drive-by. And that's sort of the central incident that sets off the rest of it, where they're like, okay, enough. But it is it's angry and kind of funny and very interesting and creative and clever. I really like the Greek chorus vibe to it. And yeah.
Wow.
It's worth seeing.
What you giving it?
A B+.
Ooh.
So there you go. Chirac.
I want to see this on my couch. I wonder if that can happen. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. Anybody listening that has the power to make that happen?
For sure. All the publicists listen to our podcast.
All.
Mm-hmm. One thing that Samuel Jackson says as the chorus, he says, I was weaned on Thunderbird from my mama's titty. Which strikes me as unlikely.
All right.
Whatever you say, Dolmedes. That's his character's name. Ooh, Angela Bassett's really good, too, as Miss Helen. There's a woman who's seen it all. She's been through it all. And she's got advice for Lysistrata. Have I mentioned I like Angela Bassett a lot? I'm pretty sure I have, but I do.
I think you have.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so there you go. Chirac, B+. All right, question of the week. Yeah?
Yeah.
That's a thing.
We do it almost all the time.
Pretty much. We ask, what's your favorite use of a question in a movie? That's all.
Yeah. We're curious.
Mm-hmm. Somebody has your favorite from Only God Forgives. Ryan Gosling says, want to fight?
That's tied with the other with Ryan Gosling then in Drive asking, want a toothpick?
Want a toothpick, that's right.
He's got a good use of the word wanna. That's what he's got going for him. And that's the only thing Ryan Gosling's got going for him.
Agreed.
The ability to say wanna.
Mm-hmm. Chris mentions, a couple of people actually mentioned Zoolander. What is this, a center for ants? Nice.
It really is. Like, not only that, if I remember correctly, there's a little dry point before that where it's like you really need that scene to be funny, and that scene is nailed.
Yeah.
I don't remember this from Daniel, but he, it's not a huge part of the film, is what he says. Tommy Lee Jones asking, what's hinky mean in The Fugitive is one of my favorites.
That's vaguely familiar.
Yeah.
I vaguely remember that.
I love how little things like that can, like, just get people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe he's the only one that loves what's hinky mean. But he loves it nonetheless.
Kurt says, where's the money, Lebowski? Good one. Mm-hmm. Edward, how'd it get burned? How'd it get burned? How'd it get burned? Yelled by Nicolas Cage on The Wicker Man from 2006.
A few people mentioned Batman in different areas. Have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very good one. Why so serious from The Dark Knight, of course.
Yes. Also a good one.
Hey, Eric.
Hmm.
Who's the black private dick that's a sex machine to all of the chicks?
Shaft. That Shaft is one man mother.
Shut your mouth.
I'm just talking about Shaft.
I can dig it. And scene.
Ooh, Katya says, shall we play a game for more games? That's a good one, too.
Shall we play a game? And then, Chad, come on, Chad. Do you want to build a snowman? Come on, Chad.
That's a question, and it's used prominently in the movie.
And not only that, that song is infinitely better than the one that mattered for the Academy and all that other – those people and blah, blah, blah. Like, build a snowman. That fits. That's the goal of it. Like, that's the point of the movie. Yeah, come on. Yeah.
Let It Go is the showstopper, though.
We need to let that go.
Michelle says – I like this because it does encapsulate the characters. It's not just an interesting question, but it is used well in No Country for Old Men, where Anton Chigurh says – if the rule you followed yet led you to this, then what good is the rule?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then Woody Harrelson's response is, do you have any idea how crazy you sound? Also sums up that character.
Indeed. Donald says, I'm funny how? Like I'm a clown? I amuse you? Which is, it is, I mean, yes. That is one of the pinnacle.
Mm-hmm. And the answer is yes. Like a clown, you amuse me. Like a clown, you amuse and terrify me. Who are you going to call? Says Patty.
What do I got to be, Mr. Pink? I love that.
What is who is your daddy and what does he do from?
Oh gosh, it's I obviously could look this up, but let me see. I had it.
Oh, it's from Kindergarten Cop.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's when he's talking to all the kids, right? Mm. In the classroom.
Yeah, I see a YouTube clip of it here.
It's not a tumor.
I've never seen that movie. Don't give me that look. I haven't. I haven't seen every Schwarzenegger movie. That's one I haven't seen.
It's filmed in Astoria.
Oh, yeah. It's out there in Oregon. Goonies territory.
Yeah. I do not suppose you could speed things up a bit. Now, is that Porter telling us just in general with our show? That's what he would have... That's what he would like.
No, I believe that is actually a quote from the Princess Bride.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Now, where was I from Memento? Dallas Neighbor says that. That's an excellent example of a question that is
perfect,
thematically useful.
Yes.
Is it safe from Marathon Man? Do you remember that whole thing? Do you remember Marathon Man?
No, but I since saw Marathon Man and I was like, oh, yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
Like I totally missed the pop culture influence of Marathon Man. Like there was references that I didn't know Marathon Man was being referenced.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What does mine say?
Sweet. What does mine say?
Dude.
What does mine say? Sweet. What does mine say, dude? That's from Dude, Where's My Car?
Man, I can't believe that worked so well. At the time.
It really didn't. That movie...
The movie didn't, but that did.
That movie worked a lot better for me the second time I saw it.
That makes sense.
Well, you miss a lot the first time. It's a lot of subtleties that go over your head.
I gotta say, for what the momentum it created in this person's career, I'm ready for mine. Are you ready for yours?
Sure, yeah.
Are you crying?
There's no crying in baseball.
Yeah. Mainly because, okay, that's Tom Hanks when he's trying to come back. Like, he's taking that role. He's got a relationship with Penny Marshall. That sets off a string of movies that is just insane. It's all over the place, and it's all good. Because you got League of Their Own, Sleepless in Seattle, Philadelphia, Forrest Gump, Apollo 13, Toy Story. He directs That Thing You Do, does the music with it.
Yeah.
You got Saving Private Ryan, you've got Mail, and it's all like kicked off with that. Because before that, he had Bonfire, The Vanities, Jovers, The Volcano, Turner and Hooch.
A couple years earlier. Yeah, that's true.
The Burbs, Punchline. He took all of that love that people had given him for Big, and he tried out things, and they didn't work out for him at the time. Although I love like half of those movies.
Yeah, and Forrest Gump, which did work out for him, but was terrible. Terrible.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, that's a good one. Good old Tom Hanks. Love
him. You know what I'm surprised didn't make the list from anybody? And I'm going to take a guess that it'll be yours once I say it.
Sure. That's probably a good guess.
Why Cookie Rocket?
I remember Why Cookie Rocket.
That was a
from
big
that
deal.
Planet of the Apes movie.
That was
yeah.
a big deal.
Why Cookie Rocket?
Why Cookie Rocket?
Why Cookie Rocky and Rocket indeed. Question of the week for next week, suggested to us by Zyna. Zyna's suggestion is, what movie that is not holiday related could you remake as a holiday movie and how?
Yeah.
Let's take one that's not a Christmas movie or New Year's or Hanukkah, you know, a holiday movie.
Like,
and make it one.
Imagine, off the top of my head, like Home Alone, but a Christmas
But it's,
movie.
You know, that's already because they're going away.
All right,
for
okay,
Christmas,
okay, okay,
right?
Like,
if you took like
Born on the 4th of July, but like Well, no, that doesn't really. What? I don't know. You give me an example.
4th of July is not really a holiday for our purposes here. It's not what we mean by holiday movie.
How dare you?
Holiday movie doesn't mean a 4th of July movie.
Did you hear that, everybody? Eric hates the 4th of July. He doesn't think it's a holiday.
I do hate the 4th of July. It is a holiday. It's not part of the holiday season, though. And I hate it because I don't like fireworks or parades. Love America. Don't like fireworks or parades.
Oh, no. I went to a parade with I went to the Portland Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Ugh.
Two-thirds of my family really liked it. And now I think we go to parades in the future because we enjoyed it.
Well,
yeah.
Sucks to be you.
I know.
Once you open that door. Well, because kids like a parade. Because kids are dumb and easily amused.
Yeah, my 41-pound 3-year-old loves to be held up high for an hour in the cold.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, a 3-year-old doesn't mind that it's 50 marching bands that all look identical to each other.
Okay,
one marching past playing something like the same song as the last one.
What was really interesting, there was one marching band, which was a bunch of retired musicians. Like the name is like Still Marching or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was the only marching band that the crowd cheered for. It was easily like everybody loved it.
That's the same band.
I did really enjoy seeing them there, and it was fun to see them active. It's like they don't have pickup marching bands.
I wonder if that's the same band that also does Portland's what's that goofy Portland Starlight Parade? Because there's some band also of old retired people. That was a big hit when I went to that this summer.
Well, there can't be that many old people, right? So it's probably the same.
The same band, band of old people. Yeah, Starlight Parade, people were very excited to see them.
Yeah.
And when they were gone, they're like, see you next year. And I was like, well, some of you.
Because you're not going, and maybe you'll see them around town.
No, because a lot of them will die between now and then, because they're very old. And marching's bad for you. So that's question of the week for next week. Why do you hate parades? No, it's what non-holiday movie could you remake as a holiday movie? And you can email us if you want, moviebspdx@gmail.com.
Otherwise, simply go to moviebs.com. It has all of your Movie BS needs. Speaking of which, you're going to be watching a lot of movies because you're going to be hanging out with family over the holidays. And that's the best way to ignore them for a couple of hours.
Right.
We do on our website.
If you can get them to shut up while you're watching the movie.
We just have a BS approved list. Like if you're like, I don't know what we should watch, just go down the list and those are all good movies. They've been approved.
That's true.
By both the B and the S.
Some long list of suggestions there for you.
Almost too many.
And for our new segment, hey, ask us something.
Ooh.
We're still working on the title.
No, that might be the winner in the clubhouse right now.
Our friend JC in Austin.
Uh-oh.
This was also his response to this week's question of the week. Who is your daddy and what does he do? Thank you, JC, for asking that again. But that's not our question. That was a suggested question.
That's not the
question we're asking. No.
Oh, we're not answering.
No. None of your business, JC.
I was already.
No. A Rose McCoy suggested, has this question for us. Is it better to visit the small luxury theaters or the mega theaters for major releases? Now, I tend to think it depends on the sort of movie it is.
100%.
For a big, big looking Mad Max kind of giant blockbuster, you want a big giant theater. With stadium seating and, a big expensive sound system. You want that. But if it's not, if it's just like a new big movie, not necessarily, I'm trying to think it would be a good example. Like any of your Marvel movies, I don't feel like are that important enough to see that way.
Oh.
The comic book
biggest
movies.
Screen. Yeah.
Because the problem with the big mega theaters there is you're going to have the big mega audiences.
That's true. I mean, one good thing about Portland is there are some kind of indie theaters that have some giant screens or like really high quality places to see a movie, like Hollywood Theater in Roseway. It's interesting. This could be something that I might be dealing with Hateful Eight, which is, I'm so excited to see it in 70 millimeter.
Yeah.
But there might be an advanced screening that is not in 70 millimeter.
Which is ridiculous.
It's completely ridiculous, but it looks like that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
and
so, probably since there's only one theater in the state uh-huh. that even has.
And I'm trying to figure out, do I go see the movie? Or do I wait until I believe it's the 25th when it will be at Hollywood Theater in 70 millimeter.
Yeah.
And I cannot decide. Because it's that thing also of like end of the year list, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, that's – I haven't seen a 70 millimeter in the theater except for – did I see
– You should – yeah, I feel like you should see it that way if you can. Especially no, if the non 70 millimeter version is the shorter version.
Oh, that's right.
Versions. And I don't know, maybe they'd show the full one at the press screening, even though it's not 70 millimeter. But
yeah,
yeah. In general, I think if you can, it's better to go to the smaller local theaters just because they're usually locally owned and independently owned and not part of big chains.
Right.
And so you'll also generally get better customer service and better attention to quality, generally speaking.
Potentially better popcorn. Sure. If you're into that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Otherwise, yeah. Like for Mad Max, especially the third time I saw it in the theater. Did I see it three times in the theater? Maybe just two.
You want to go like, as big and loud as you can.
Yep. You just want to find the greatest potential screen experience that you can.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
Thanks for your question, A. Rose McCoy.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Jeff, what'd you watch?
Thank you for that question.
You're welcome.
So we watched some things.
Yeah.
And actually, I don't know if you watched this. Did you – so for Film Score Rejects, you had me watch this documentary about an umbrella store owner or something.
Yes, The Umbrellas of Cherbourg.
The Umbrellas of Cherbourg. You haven't heard of it, right, people?
They probably have.
Have they?
I hope so.
1964, French film, musical. And I forgot to ask you for the article. So you guys can go read our back and forth if you'd like on Film School Rejects. How many times do you think you've seen this movie?
I've only seen it 3 or 4 times.
Last time you watched it was?
I watched it sometime in the last couple of weeks.
Oh, you did?
To,
okay.
To refresh my memory. Yeah.
So there we go. That's something I watched. But then you and I watched Diary of a Teenage Girl.
I remember that when we watched that. Came out earlier this year.
Yeah. We finally had a chance to see it. That's a tough watch.
It's tough watch if you have issues with a 15-year-old girl having a sexual relationship with her mother's 30-year-old boyfriend or 35-year-old boyfriend.
Yeah,
only if you have issues with that.
It is
I mention the boyfriend is Alexander Skarsgård? I don't know if that makes it better or worse.
It's a really authentic coming of age film.
Mm-hmm.
The statutory rape in it is so
very statutory.
Yes. It's so uncomfortable, but It, goodness, does it have an authentic voice and a heck of mm-hmm. a performance by the lead actress. It's worth seeing, but man, is it tough.
Yeah, it is tough to see a young person, you know, being sort of taken advantage of and making bad decisions and stuff.
I mean, that's it. That's the thing.
Yeah. It'd be a lot worse if, you know, if she were being raped, if it was some non-consensual situation.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There is
nothing. She's a teenager. She's making wrong decisions, but at least she is making the decisions.
Oh, come on.
At least it's what she thinks she wants at the moment, even though
it is what she thinks she wants at the moment. She is not making the decisions.
I have a much harder time watching if someone's being forced or coerced or whatever. And this is just a girl making wrong decisions because of her screwed up mom.
I understand that you are saying you would rather watch statutory rape than rape. I get what you are saying.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is it's still tough to watch the manipulation of a young woman. And what's amazing with this movie is it's from her perspective, and you can tell that she's unaware, as most teenage girls would be in this situation. So it feels like a story that I haven't seen on film.
Yeah.
And is worth it for all those reasons. Kristen Wiig's plays the mom in the movie. But yeah, really heck of a performance by, is it Belle Powley? Belle Powley?
Yeah, that's the actress.
Really.
She's not 15. Don't worry.
Yeah, thank you.
She is 16. Just kidding. No, she's older than that, 23 or so. Yeah.
And a small small interesting performance by Christopher Maloney, who's
Maloney, yeah,
Maloney, mom's
ex-husband,
right? So yeah, that's
a good movie, but yeah,
hey,
it's tough to watch at times.
Hey, Eric,
hmm.
What'd you watch?
I watched a movie called The Fly.
Mm. You had never seen it, right?
I had never seen it. The John Cronenberg.
Yeah.
With Jeff Goldblum.
Yep.
And I had not seen it before. I had seen the original one. This one's very different. This one's much grosser. Very gross movie.
Very gross.
Super gross. Just with the body horror and the gross and the...
There's a multitude of cringeworthy things, but for me, there was nothing more memorable than the arm wrestling scene.
Mm, snapping the guy's arm.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed this, and there's a twist in the story that I hadn't really thought about or hadn't foreseen, or that I didn't know about, I guess, a third act complication that I had not thought of. I guess I shouldn't spoil it for people who haven't seen it, but mm-hmm. one of the repercussions of him turning into a fly and having this girlfriend, Gina Davis. Yeah, I enjoyed it all the way through. I didn't realize David Cronenberg played the gynecologist. That's creepy. It's creepy to think of David Cronenberg as a gynecologist because, man, talk about your body horror. What else?
I saw something else.
What else did you? What did you see?
I saw a movie called I Smile Back.
Oh, with Sarah Silverman.
With Sarah Silverman, and it's a really good performance by her.
I've heard that about this movie and her.
Really good. Josh Charles is in it too, and she plays a work-at-home mom of two who she stops taking some pills and starts taking other pills and makes a lot of terrible decisions and has a lot to do with her childhood. And it's pretty you kind of think you have a sense of the third act, and then it goes a little deeper than you expect. And really, really impressive by her. It's a good movie if you want to sit through it with her. And I would say
you don't make it sound appealing when you say if you want to sit through it.
Well, because it's a rough sit through, kind of like Diary. It's one of those things where you think, oh, I'm kind of watching a drama with some comedy in it, and this is good. And then it just keeps getting a little bit heavier, and you kind of she makes you feel this this dread about kind of the typical life, and it's a good focus on it. So I really liked it, but yeah, it's not necessarily going to make you feel good.
You know, Sarah Silverman. It's in second place, and there's people naming Goldman would be in first place. There's no Bronzman. Why isn't that a name? Is bronze just not even worth declaring? Do you think that's it? Like, why be proud of the fact that we were in third place? I'm just asking questions here.
Sometimes it's good for you to just ask them. Sometimes.
Hey, Silverman already, you're being like, yeah, we're second place, but we're still proud of it. What?
Hey, Eric.
Huh?
Did you see anything else?
Not really. Not worth talking about.
Right.
Not worth mentioning. Hey, I think that's the end of the show. This show in particular, I mean, this episode of it.
Yes.
Legend, I think is pretty good. I liked it more than you.
Yeah.
It's not great.
Nope.
Tom Hardy is really good in it, and so is Tom Hardy. And Chirac, I really like a lot. Spike Lee, the new Spike Lee movie. Incendiary and clever. Entertaining. And question of the week for next week, what non-holiday movie could you remake into a holiday movie, and how?
Yes.
And how?
Why?
And yeah. And where. And when.
Right.
And that's it then. Anything else you want to add?
No, I'm good. Thanks.
All right. Yeah. Hey, for Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Bear.
Thanks for listening and good day.
I said good day.